This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Battle for Malaysia on BFM 89.9.
Melissa and Uma with you. It is 6:37 p.m. Bridget Welsh is back in the studio, Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University. Bridget, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
With more analysis of what's going on with the elections, I think before we get into, I guess, what's at stake in Peninsular Malaysia, I think one of the big driving factors behind this election has been the Najib Mahathir contest, right? So much of this election has been framed as a choice between these two men, almost in a presidential way. What do you make of it, Bridget?
Well, I think that this is what we would expect. I mean, in 2013, the whole campaign was about Najib. And in 2018, he's followed the same trend. The difference for Najib is that his persona is a liability compared to the past. But he still kind of focuses almost all the campaign around himself. And this is very prominent in some states more than others, say Malacca. But in some other places, like Johor, his picture was not as featured. So we do see this presidential dimension. Mahathir, of course, his tactic is to challenge directly Najib's foundation, and he is essentially, you know, he's saying that he's made a mistake with Najib. And we saw last night in these two speeches two very different approaches trying to appeal. And Najib's was very typical of his campaign style. It was, let's make a deal. I'm going to offer you something,
right,
and you can take the
goodies.
Bargains. Mm-hmm. And in Mahathir was talking more about statesmanship, but at the same juncture, he didn't have a clear sense of what the direction was going to happen after. But he talked about the general problems. These two styles are quite typical.
But you know, Uma, you always say that this has boiled down to essentially a presidential race. I don't know whether that's true. Whether it is at the end of the day down to these two men. Would you say it's as simplistic as that, Bridget?
Well, I think there are two things here. First of all, there are other people who are at play. It's not a coincidence that Anwar Ibrahim's photo was on that in the backdrop.
Mm-hmm. The big photo.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for Mahathir, and I think for Rosma, for Najib, his wife is an issue in the campaign, and this is something that goes to the ground. But for most contests, a lot of the issues and decisions are local. Do they like the candidate?
Mm-hmm.
you know, a friend described a story today that they didn't vote for one person because they didn't like the picture. It looked like a Mutt Repman.
You know?
So, I mean, you know, these things end up being something very trivial for people who are not disconnected to politics. And you have to remember, Malaysia is not a very literate political society. Many people in Malaysia don't engage politics unless it's around the election period. And so, and then they focus on who's the person who's going to serve me. And this is particularly true in semi-rural and rural areas.
Which is why I thought the speech that Najib gave yesterday really kind of, he knew the buttons to push. Well, you say, Bridget, that it was really very much in his style. But, you know, he made those populist promises, those three promises, the announcements, the special prizes that he said he was going to give away.
Sounds like a game show.
It was, yeah. Well, very much so. Everyone was just waiting for the special announcements. But, you know, that those populist goodies that he gave away, essentially, I guess that could essentially swing some people's minds if they had been fence sitters.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I mean, there's so much in the BN's manifesto.
But the promise of a public holiday that you reckon, I mean, for those who are not engaged in politics in a deep way, would that have been enough to sway their minds?
I think a lot of this is promises too late. Huh? And, you know, what do people want? They don't want a holiday. They want the money to pay for the holiday. I mean, I think those are two very different sets of things.
Tell me this, Bridget. I mean, you've been following Malaysian politics for such a long time now. I'm making no assumptions about your age. But there's a rhetoric among the public when it comes to this debate as to who's committed the greatest sin, right? Was it, how can you support Mahathir and he's supporting the opposition? And we often forget that, you know, I don't know if you can credit Mahathir with this, but it was Mahathir's sacking of Anwar that led to Anwar's reformasi in many ways, because he too was cut from the same cloth. So what are the conversations you're hearing on the ground ground because you've traveled the country. Mm. I mean, is this debate something that's just happening among liberal elites on Facebook, or is it stretching across the country as well, the whose sins are greater?
Yes, I in a coffee shop outside of in a small place outside of in Kuala Lumpur in Terengganu, I sat down with a retired civil servant, and we were having a debate of who was the most corrupt person, Mahathir and Najib. And of course, he was saying that he was corrupt, also the civil servant. So it was quite interesting how the perceptions of these issues are there. But I think it's much more than just these two men. I think the turmoil that I saw among voters was a sense of how they engage the system, and if there's anything that's going to change this election is whether or not there is a disconnect of UMNO voters from UMNO.
Right. Yeah, there have been rumblings that perhaps, you know, UMNO voters or UMNO members themselves were, there's a feeling of discontent or frustration with the party, but silently discontent. So whether that translates into votes is something that we will be watching very carefully throughout the evening.
Yeah, I think so. Bridget, also, when it comes to this greater conversation about the local issues, the thing that keeps cropping up over and over again, of course, is the questions of the economy, right? Has it been a similar trend in both Peninsula and East Malaysia?
The one issue that is mentioned is the economy, but particularly, you know, it's certain things about the economy. For most people, they see GST. That's it. Mm-hmm. They don't like GST. And they kind of blame GST for their problems in terms of economic cost of living and others. And they don't The level of economic discussions, jobs or types of growth, don't really extend. There's some discussion in some places of Chinese investment. For example, we see this outside of Kuantan, but we don't have a kind of meaningful discussion of growth levels and what that means for the different communities. For example, in Northern Perak, there was talk about rubber prices and how GST is being placed on rubber prices compared to the past. So these were a lot of grumbling on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite interesting to see if it's been different, the political messaging has been different at the state level versus the federal level, especially when it comes to addressing the economic issues that perhaps voters feel they're facing. Or what do you think? Do you think there's been a slight difference in the way parties have approached, say, the political messaging at a state level to make it perhaps more nuanced than at a federal economic policy level?
I think the two states, well, besides Sabah, which we'll discuss later, I think that the two states where there's been a really quite honed state campaign is Kelantan, where the emphasis by the BN has been on economic projects. So you see, you know, the pictures of Mustafa Mohamed and Topa and the 11 billion projects that are going to be promised and the need for jobs and economic development. You know, PASA's governed that state for 28 years. And I think the BN feels that they have a good chance of winning, especially among younger voters. And Kelantanese are extraordinarily economically entrepreneurial, and they're trying to build on that. The second state where you also have a quite different campaign is in Johor. In Johor, it's not so much about the economy per se, but about, you know, kita pilih biru, huh? We choose blue, right? And of course, and we talk about the sense of Johorians coming together. So these two campaigns are quite distinct, and there's been a kind of distancing of Najib and Johor, intentionally so.
Well, what about 1MDB? Because I'm not hearing you say that that word. We saw Arul Kanda Kandasamy making his rounds on the Cerama circuit to perhaps explain the 1MDB issue or to take questions about the 1MDB issue. Is that no longer a factor in the political messaging of parties?
I think it is important, especially among urban voters, and I think we see this also disproportionately among Chinese voters and more educated voters as a whole who are connected. But 1MDB is complicated even for those who follow it.
Yes.
And so I think it's less about the issue but more about what it symbolizes. And for it's not just about issues of kleptocracy or corruption. It's a sense for ordinary people that Malaysia looks bad.
Yeah.
And this is this kind of national pride, I mean, that people feel that this is not, you know, why has he made the country look so wrong? These are the way it's conceptualized for ordinary people, even if they can't understand it. And others just dismiss it altogether.
More with Bridget Welsh in just a little bit. We've got some messages coming your way, and then Scorpions with Wind of Change on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Bridget Welsh is still with us, and we're talking about elections all night long, obviously, but what the stakes are in Peninsular Malaysia.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the key things to discuss when we start talking about what's at stake here really is, you know, what we've come to assume as voter blocks or voter banks, say, for Barisan Nasional. You know, one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting yesterday with caretaker Prime Minister Najib's speech was he made references to women and youth. And then I saw that as perhaps, you know, his final call, final plea to these voter banks, so-called voter banks, voter blocs, to vote for him. Women being one and youth. Do you see that as his final appeal to women voters, perhaps?
Look, the reality is that especially among Malay women, the BN has done much better than Pakatan or PAS. And they know that that is their vote bank from a perspective of the voter, the overall country. Mm-hmm. And they also rely on women during the Juanita for the campaigning. And they're in the ground, and they're the ones that really carry out the machinery and actually bring the votes home. So I think this, you know, of all the campaigns, Najib's BN campaign was the most focused on women in the manifesto and yesterday. And of course, it's interesting because the actual gains for women, you know, have not been that significant under his administration compared to what we've seen, say, ironically, under Mahathir, where you have very prominent ministers such as Rafida. Mm-hmm. You don't have the same sort of prominence in the context of the Najib government. But you do see these set issues that they're focusing and targeting on. And of course, they also know in terms of the numbers that 40% of the electorate are young people. And they know if they want to win the election, they're going to have to win more of them. And Khairi Jamaluddin's focus on TN50 was a targeted campaign. I think, you know, they have some resonance with younger voters. It's specifically within the Malay community. It's not necessarily among Chinese youth where we see much more turning toward the opposition. So young people, but there are other bases that I think are kind of interesting to look at that I'm asking myself during this election. One is the tradition of the police and the military.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, this idea of the early voters as being a kind of a safety bonus for the BN is going to be interesting. And it's only in 1999 did we see real big splits within this postal voting, and we're going to be now what is called early voting. So I think we're going to be looking at that. And the early reports suggest that there have been some swings in these military and postal votes, but maybe not as much as people would expect in terms of police and military. The second aspect of that is the civil service.
Right.
And, you know, you have to understand that in many of these rural constituencies, civil servants serve two functions. Number one, they are powerful influencers in local communities, in these rural and semi-rural areas, because they are kind of people who are respected.
They've got jobs of some stature in the community.
Where everyone knows your name.
Teachers, right? They represent, they're the district officers. Mm-hmm. These people are position, you know, have local stature. Huh? And at the same time, in some of these places, they have the numbers, right? You know, take a constituency for like Sitiu and Terengganu, where you have a lot of government services that have been placed there. They're the ones that can make the difference. And it's interesting to see whether or not Najib's promises of different rewards to the civil service are going to have the same impact that it had in 2013. So we see a differences.
One of the things that struck me in the past few weeks has been, you know, all these messages or the misinformation information that's been spread about the secrecy of your vote. You know, there was a lot of there was a lot being made about, oh, they might know who I'm voting for, and then a lot of you know, the EC saying, coming out to say that no, your vote is secret, or Bursa coming out to assure that the vote is secret and your ballot, no one will know who you voted for. That to me really spoke about, I guess, this kind of silent undercurrent, so to speak, perhaps within those who are dissatisfied but afraid to show their dissatisfaction.
And I think it's real. I mean, I had a conversation with a police officer in Cebu, a lady who was 3 years from retirement. And I asked her how, you know, what was happening for her in the election. And she said, only 3 more years before I get my vote.
Oh.
Which was a very interesting, you know, and then, you know, reference, because she was 3 years from retirement. So she feels that, you know, there is pressures within those system. And I think this is something real for a lot of people, because they're concerned about job security and perceptions of issues of secrecy.
Because it's such a close-knit community, isn't it?
It is. It is. Bridget, very quickly, before we go to the news, the traditional base of BN, you mentioned Rafi Daazis, you mentioned Dr. Mahathir and Tun Daim. The Gang of Three, has this split actually affected the traditional voter base? Because I guess the traditional voter base of BN kind of grew up and was groomed by these individuals as well, and now there's that split within the party.
I think it does affect some parts of the civil service, especially retired civil servants who are familiar with them. And some of them don't like these people as well. So
of course,
I think, you know, it cuts both ways. But I think the more interesting question that I'm asking is how it's affecting the business community. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, the business community has been in favor of BN.
They're good for business.
Yes, they're perceived as good for business. And I think that we see these very deep entrenched perceptions. Najib is using that to his advantage in 2013, and I think that coming into the campaign, it was seen the same way. Pakatan Harapan's economic policy program really didn't really cut muster for many people in the business community. But Daim and Rafida coming back has had an impact here, because it says to them, hey, you've got different people in this particular mix.
I remember these guys.
Yeah. Now, how much is uncertain yet? And I think we have to be careful not to over-speculate. But I think that conversations with business people suggested that they were looking at Harapan somewhat differently with this Mahathir group of people who have managed the economy in the past.
All right. Bridget Welsh, unfortunately, we're stuck with this all night.
Yes, thanks very much, Omar.
You can hear the smile in her face, in her voice. We're going to be going to the news. After that, more election updates coming your way right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.